All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, April 6, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is 30 degrees and pretty dark and cloudy here in upstate New York. I think it's supposed to rain for the next couple days, but we're getting back to freezing. So that means that our 6 inches of snow that we received this weekend will finally melt and all of my flowers can get back to blooming. I actually saw a story out of AccuWeather yesterday. They are threatening that I guess a lot of the fruit trees in the Northeast, and it definitely was not in New York State, but maybe a little bit more south toward D.C. They are threatening now that with the cold, and it was pretty cold, I think last night it got down to 18, that a lot of the fruit trees, the plums and the peaches and things of that nature, were all in bloom. And there might be a big shortage of fruit now this year because of this cold snap. So keep an eye on that. So where do we leave off on yesterday? We titled the show AI, Kurzweil, Google, IBM, Livermore Labs, Microsoft, and Toyota. It was a big gaggle. Everybody is elbowing each other, fighting for who's going to take the lead with this new 21st century lunacy. Everybody's in bed now. It doesn't matter who you are. We ended up looking at some of Toyota's new endeavors. Back a few weeks ago, we had read about Toyota's new $1 billion investment in artificial intelligence. They are opening a lab in Silicon Valley, and they are dedicating their resources to automation and building production and manufacturing robots, as well as putting lots of time and effort into self-driving cars and smart technologies. But we discovered yesterday, oh, and Gil Pratt, who was the guy who ran the DARPA Robotics Challenge, is the one who's going to be running that Toyota facility. And they had a satellite in Boston, Mass. As well. But we found out yesterday that Toyota, after a $1 billion investment, they now are investing some more cash into another subsidiary that is named Toyota Connected. And this is kind of where we just touched on the beginning of this story at the end of the show yesterday. So I think we're going to kick it off here. This is out of MIT Technology Review. Your future Toyota may know where you're going before you've told it. Toyota's new subsidiary will manage the troves of data collected from its increasingly connected cars. You know, and this is sad because, like I said, we were talking about this a few weeks ago, and I was telling you guys about how back in college, my boyfriend had a Toyota Celica. It was such a nice little car, really was. But, I mean, I don't think there's going to be anything that's not connected to the Matrix here very shortly. It's everybody, if they're anyone, if they plan to stay in business in the 21st century, needs to get on this bandwagon and needs to do it now. I mean, even Ford has opened up a division in Silicon Valley to focus on self-driving cars. GM bought themselves some self-driving car company. I mean, they're all getting in the game. Whether the car of the future runs on electricity, hydrogen, or old-fashioned gasoline, it will emit billions of bytes of data. And the battle to control and exploit that data is just getting started. You know, it's funny. Hold on 1 second here. If you guys remember back a year, maybe 2 years, I don't know. Time just flies when you're having fun. But I think it was only about a year ago, this last year, my kid came home from school to tell me that they had taken a test. And at the end of the test, and it was on the computer, and at the end of the test, some questions popped up, and the kids had to freeform type into the text box. And one of the questions that had come up was asking the kids whether or not they would drive in a Google self-driving car. Now, talk about a captive audience and doing, like, market research. So we have Google using our children in school and asking them questions as to what they thought. And so in the text box, It's a, would you drive in a self-driving car? Why or why not? And my kid comes home at dinner and is telling me that she got this question. And she put in the box, no, she would not drive in the self-driving car because it could take you to the police station. You know, chip off the old block on that one. But you guys are going to laugh at this because we're going to go a little bit off topic for a second. Lady Pitbull drops me a message yesterday. Hi, LPB, if you're out there listening. And I'll tell you what, apparently she and I thought the same thing. When we read the title of the story, the police could be controlling your self-driving car. And this is out of Market Watch talking about that very thing, like that they could literally lock you in and bzz, 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 take you to the police station. There'd be nothing you could do about it, especially if they had like non-breakable glass in the windows or whatever. So how frightening is that? Like my little kid is envisioning our dystopian future. It's going to happen, people. You know, that's why they are rolling out this technology so quickly, because they realized that, yeah, we're going to be mad. We're going to be mad when we realize that capitalism is over with. We're going to be mad when we realize that there is no more American dream. We're going to be really mad when we realize that all that time and effort that we worked our entire lives to put away what little we could for that dangling carrot hopeful day someday in our 60s, maybe, if we're lucky, we might be able to kick back in our last remaining days and enjoy the fruits of our labor. We're going to be pissed when we realize that none of that is going to happen now. That everything that we were sold, all of the instant gratification and all of this buy, things that you don't need, that all of this was just to make them all rich, and now they're going to take it all away. And now we're all going to be brought down to a common denominator of third world, oh my God, it's climate change, do more with less. It's all because you want to drive a car, Johnny, or it's all because you want to eat beef. Because you know what? Cows make lots of greenhouse gases. So for the masses, it's going to have to be insect protein, 3D printed in pretty Disney shapes and colors, full of protein and nutrition, because it'll be good for you and it'll keep your socialized healthcare costs down by making sure that you stay healthy. But don't worry about it, because you'll be happy. You'll have your nice little subsidized apartment in the city. Everything will be closed. Push a button. Your self-driving car will show up. And once a month, you get your own sex bot. And she'll even read you the news or stories, make your dinner, clean your apartment before she goes next door. I mean, it's sick. This is the future that they're trying to sell us. This is the future that they want us to think is so much better than being independent. Because, you know, it's so hard to think. Oh, my God. So hard to make decisions. It's so hard to go on the internet and determine what stories are truth and what are not. And it's so difficult that Google has had to implement a truth algorithm. Because that pesky internet, you know, Bill Clinton said it. We need some sort of ministry of truth. Because it's so difficult for people to determine what is true on the internet. Oh, you better help all of those people who have lots of difficulty reading and critically thinking out then. All right, let's get to this Toyota story. So whether the car of the future runs on electricity, hydrogen, or old-fashioned gasoline, you better believe it's not going to be old-fashioned gasoline. It will emit billions of bytes of data, and the battle to control and exploit that data is just getting started. This past Monday, the Japanese carmaker Toyota announced a new subsidiary called Toyota Connected that will manage and mine the data collected from its vehicles And the company said it would collaborate with Microsoft on the venture. That's about where we ended up yesterday. The data collected and delivered might include mapping data, engine statistics, and records of driver behavior. Ding, ding, probably. Sent real time to your insurance company. And this will be, of course, before they remove the steering wheel, the gas pedal, and the brake pedal, and make it completely, fully autonomous. Most immediately, this could mean updating vehicle features or patch bugs remotely, but the goal is also to develop new kinds of interfaces that predict a driver's intention. Now, we've talked a lot about behavioral analytics. We also talked about some of the road rage stuff. I mean, they already have facial recognition programs that can detect your emotions. And I mean, they have all kinds of biosensors out there now, but I would imagine from the expression on your face, since we already have robots that can read human emotion by your different expressions, but not only that, by your blood pressure. They had some sort of biosensor in the steering wheel, let's say, to detect your blood pressure, by your body temperature. Obviously, when you're getting angry, you know, if they had an infrared camera, you know, very camouflage somewhere in the dashboard that could just be reading your temperature sensor, they could very easily tell that you were getting kind of sweaty and then give some expressions like scrunch brows. You know, the car could tell that you might be having a road rage moment, which, by the way, I don't know if anyone saw, we didn't cover this, but we had talked about toxoplasmosis at one point with the kitty cat poop virus controlling your brain. Well, they now believe that toxoplasmosis might also be responsible for these spouts of anger that could be also related to road rage. So if you haven't looked that up, I don't know if we're ever going to get to that story because it was just kind of an oddball thing. But they really are spending a lot of time now looking at how these potential viruses and parasites have been infecting our brains for eons and affecting our behavior as well. Maybe we'll look at that, because I just saw another one yesterday too about an ancient virus in our DNA that actually is what makes the selection for the sex of a new baby as it's gestating. It's an ancient virus in our DNA. Like, how bizarre is that? All right, anyway, back to this. Sorry, I digress. Says over the past decade, cars have become vastly more computerized and connected. And Tesla epitomizes this trend, issuing software updates via 3G to its customers' cars to update the interface, add new apps, and even to tweak the performance of the engines and the brakes. Well, that's messed up. That's probably kind of like Volkswagen, right? Every time they found out that they were, the Volkswagen would detect that it was being put on the smog meter or whatever, it would change its rate of output so it could fake the systems. Oh, don't even tell me that Chrome is going to take a crap here, because this would be very bad. I have like a week's worth of links that I really don't want to lose, because this would really make the show suck. All right. Anyway, hold on. We got to scroll. Oh, I'm about having a flash crash now for 32 tabs. La, 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 we'll sing, sing. All right. So they want to be able to do updates remotely. I don't know if we really need to read any more of this. I kind of wanted to, but if I can't, I'm not going to cry over it. Toyota did not disclose precisely what data it plans to collect, so don't worry about it, Johnny, or how it would collect it. But it would likely fit models with more connectivity and computer systems that allow for more comprehensive software control. The technology, though, could introduce new security risks. And we looked at that way back when with DARPA Dan in 60 Minutes and how easily it was to hack a car, make the brakes go on or the windshield wipers. And, you know, there was a, I don't know if it was a bill, must have been a bill, right? That's what they submit to Congress. There was a document that one of the congressmen, and I don't remember which one it was, but you can look it up. He introduced it to Congress, listing all of the car manufacturers that had these gaping software holes in them that were easily hackable already. And, you know, when we see accidents like what happened with Michael Hastings, and just recently I saw there was a mysterious one with the Weather Channel guy who came out talking about stuff, and all of a sudden he slammed into a brick wall in the basement of the Weather Channel. Whoops. In his car, by the way, because, oh, his accelerator pedal stuck. And there was some other guy who just had an unfortunate end as he hit the side of a train trestle or an embankment, an underpass, as he was going under. His car just careened out of control. Don't know why. Right into the concrete. How does that happen? Just out of the blue. I mean, I guess maybe a bee landed on you or something and you were driving and turned your head. But just seems kind of mysterious. And when we watched that 60 Minutes interview with DARPA Dan, and we actually originally had watched a direct DARPA video with the chick that was talking about how easy it is to hack cars after Hastings died. You know, it didn't seem too difficult. I mean, Dan was showing you how to do it with a laptop, but the chick at DARPA was even saying that in the past they were able to encode things on a music CD. So you wouldn't even know about it, and you stick it into your CD player, and it would cause the car to be remote controlled. Yes, that is true. So, you know, as the future moves forward to the world of the Internet of Things, cars and people being two of those Internets of Things, we have some large institution that's monitoring and mangling all of the Internets of Things, mixing and matching, tracking, bagging, and tagging. And then you got, of course, be afraid, be very afraid. Hackers everywhere. That's why we need to surveil it all now. You know, anything goes, guys. You know, when they start telling us that our biometrics are going to be used to buy everything and to open our door and to get into our car and to drive and to attend things and to buy groceries, we're going to have a real problem. It's going to be all underground. There's not going to be any more interaction with the established society. We will be full outcasts. It is going to be like Running Man. You're going to see us broadcast on those digital billboards networked across America with the UAV self-driving unmanned aerial vehicles with the 1.8 gigapixel Argus camera on it as they're broadcasting us live from coast to coast as a fugitive doing 230 point facial recognition. I mean, it's just frightening. All this is frightening. Yet, and just wait until we get into some of the biological stuff that's going on. I mean, this is just like the tiny tip of the iceberg. I'm crying about Toyota wanting to collect data from their cars. And I mean, this is probably the least of our worries. Anyway, all right, I'm going to blow through the rest of the story. So as cars have become more data-guzzling, Toyota and other car makers face increased competition. Companies including Google and Apple, and yeah, Apple is also working on self-driving capabilities, have spied an opportunity to tap into the data coming from cars. And they are already making forays into the vehicle interface using dashboard systems that mirror a customized iPhone or Android device. Via Android Auto, for instance, Google now will already try to predict the destination for a journey based on messages found in your Gmail or your recent Google searches, and then automatically offers you directions. So it scans all of your private communications and your searches, and it says, oh, I think you might be going to your honey's house because we saw you send her an email, said you were coming over. Of course, that is not going to benefit law enforcement or spying agencies at all to be able to guess where you're going using data analytics at all. No, no, no. Anyway, meanwhile, cloud computing providers, including Microsoft, are chomping at the bit to provide an on-demand computer power for services such as high-resolution mapping, often used for automated driving. Do, 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 do. All right, the police could be controlling your self-driving car. This is a story from Lady Pitbull. She sent me yesterday. Although today's roads aren't filled with self-driving cars, tech companies from Alphabet's Google to Apple and the U.S. government are proposing that they will be soon. If and when the bets pay off, the basic features, good and bad, of AV systems will already have been established and hence hard to change. And remember, we read a few stories about Google pressuring the feds to get their ducks in a row and line up laws state to state to make sure that they're uniform for these self-driving cars. They already gave approval designating Google's AI engine that's running these self-driving cars as an official driver of a vehicle. It is time to start thinking about rules of the new road, and otherwise they may end up with some analog to today's chaos in cyberspace, which arose from decisions in the 1980s about how personal computers and the internet can work. And who's writing this story for MarketWatch? What chaos is there? I mean, yeah, there was chaos in the 90s when there was no NIST standards. So everyone put out their own 56K, let's say, or their own IDE spec or something. And then everyone got their shit together and said, okay, they agreed, they had a big meeting, and everyone built to that spec. But there's not absolute confusion anymore. Maybe in the Internet of Things, but good, let that shit all blow up. We don't want the Internet of Things. I am fully happy with just the nodes of my computer network as being connected to the Internet. I do not need every blood cell in my blood connected to my doctor. One of the biggest issues will be the rules under which public infrastructures and public safety officers may be empowered to override how autonomous vehicles are controlled. And one side note to that, somebody posted a story for me the other day saying that the infrastructure for self-driving cars might be what holds them back for now because our roads are in such shitty condition. Oh, so, you know, there is a benefit to the elite sucking all of our taxpayer dollars out of the country, not utilizing it for infrastructure or education, but sending it to make bombs. At least we can't launch the self-driving cars just yet. I mean, personally, I think the roads are in good enough shape for them to release the robot army, but they're saying that it might cause them some issues. It is not hard to imagine why they might want such override power on the vehicles. One is for traffic control. And as automated vehicles proliferate, there are many advantages to having them talk to intelligent roadways and to better use scarce freeway space. Controls may also be imposed to leave lanes clear for emergency vehicles or crowded buses, and road conditions that are hard to detect by automated vehicle sensors, like weather-related lane closures, may also be more efficiently and fairly handled by having the roadways or emergency crews direct the automated vehicles away from problematic lanes as well as around police, fire, and EMS activity. Overrides could also be used to restrict certain vehicles from sensitive locations like military sites. Yes, you cannot, just like on your Google Maps, where they have certain areas of the map with a big black box over it so you don't know what's there, you know. We're hiding Area 51 on this map. Well, they also will not allow you to program in the coordinates for your self-driving car to go, James, to that location. It's interesting, too, because they're talking about the self-driving cars. But we also touched on, in Germany, I think it's Daimler Chrysler, is already beta testing some of the self-driving tractor trailers. And I think I don't know if it was Chrysler, but it was one of the manufacturers of tractor trailers, was already doing beta tests in Nevada as well for that. So put on a seatbelt, because this is coming, and it's coming faster than we expect. Of course, it's all going to be done in the name of safety, in the name of climate change, and because robots are so much more efficient than puny humans. More intrusive controls may be called in to deal with crime. For instance, high-speed chases could become now a thing of the past. The vehicle of a drunk or drugged individual, oh yes, the mayhem, who insist on doing their own driving, could be pulled over if their car's actions could be controlled from the outside. Why wouldn't they just put like a breathalyzer or a, I shouldn't give them ideas, or a biometric sensor with your thumbprint. It takes a little bit of your blood sucking it. Didn't Google have a patent for that? It would suck it like right through your skin and do it on the spot. Blood sensor and test for drugs or disease. Make that mandatory before you get in and they give you the controls. Otherwise, you're going to be relegated to a car, the Bosey car with no steering wheel, gas pedal, or brake. It says, to prevent great mayhem, police may dearly want to override the use of automated vehicles by terrorists, of course, and other criminals. And these capabilities cannot be conjured up overnight. So it's all in the name of criminals and terrorists and keeping us safe. We're going to make sure that self-driving car gets rid of all those pesky people that are causing us horrible problems. Automatic vehicles would be built with the capacity to accept real-time commands, which in turn requires some communication channels plus the requisite software to override the automatic vehicle's internal logic and in very standard ways so that a single command is interpreted the same way in every vehicle. There also have to be authentication standards and encryption standards to limit commands to those who are authorized to use them. So basically, they want a full-blown backdoor into automated cars so that at will, they can hack into it. No, they won't be hackers. It'll be law enforcement or cyber patrol center. They'll be able to hack into it at any time and take control. Yeah, that sounds like a great freaking idea to me. Like I said, don't get into a self-driving car. Don't do it. Those doors are going to lock, and it's going to take you somewhere. And I'll tell you what else. You know what they're going to do? Is they're going to fill the inside with advertising. That's how they're going to finance all this. So you'll just be able to push the button, and it'll be convenience. Remember, we love our convenience. We'd sell our soul for convenience to have that self-driving car come pick you up and take you to that grocery store for free. Be just like a Subway with all the ads. But the ads, see, that's how Google makes their money. The ads will pay for it all. It says rules and protocols also have to be developed to ensure that there are no or very few non-autonomous vehicles. So you have one of those old school cars, you might be a terrorist. Make sure that there are no or very few non-autonomous vehicles, and to ensure that terrorists, of course, criminals or hackers, cannot jailbreak their cars in order to evade external command overrides. And all of this must keep in mind the possibility that other governments around the world, notably China, may be as or more eager to see which automatic vehicles built with such capabilities, but not necessarily to U.S. standards. I was thinking of one thing, too. So they already got the black boxes in the cars, just like they have in the planes. And I had a friend of mine telling me about a place she works for. And they already track a lot of that information from her company car, where it tracks where she's going, how fast she's going. And it's reporting that all back to the insurance company. I mean, you know, fleet vehicles have been a place where they've been doing a lot of this testing. That's where they had a lot of the GPS tracking real time, where you can map and lay it all out so you can see where your fleet is, you know, see whether the guy who's supposed to be installing the furnace at noon is sitting at a strip club instead. I mean, it happens. But, you know, this isn't new tech. It's just now all going to be rolled out to all the consumers and all the vehicles, and everything is going to become a node on the Internet of Things. Bag, tag, and track. It says, last but by no means least, is whether such an override could possibly be made hack-proof. A system to allow authorized people to control someone else's car is also a system with a built-in mechanism by which unauthorized people, a.k.a. the hackers under your bed, can do the very same. The problem is they already have that capability on many of the currently driving around newer vehicles. I'll have to find that and put it in the notes. I'll make sure I'll find the 60 Minutes DARPA Dan demonstration where they do that. But there is a bill somewhere out there that was submitted to Congress last year. I'll see if I can find that, because it actually lists all the cars in it that are potentially hackable right now. Even if hackers are kept out, if every police officer is equipped to override automatic vehicle systems, the number of authorized users is already in the hundreds of thousands of people that will have access to the back-end systems of your car. And if the override authority is extended to members of the National Guard, the military police, fire, EMS units, and bus drivers, guys, likelihood that car makers, repair personnel, and entertainment companies will want to communicate with other parts of the car further adds complications, and it is unlikely that every last one of them will actually play by the rules. So clearly, whether or how government gets that kind of power is a questionable, serious, and deep. And we better start thinking about it now. It's pretty horrifying. It's very horrifying. Hundreds of thousands of people with potentially access to your back-end systems of your autonomous car. What are they going to do with that? Just think about it. And if it's your car, then it's also your home and everything else, because it's all done in the name of safety. I just saw a story also yesterday afternoon. We talked about these before, just staying on the vein for a second of autonomous. DARPA had put out an RFP, request for proposal, a while back, looking for what they were calling gremlins. Of course, gremlins caught my attention, made me think of some horror flick I'd seen a long time ago. But these gremlins are drones. Just like the sub-mothership that we read about a few weeks ago, where they could load the belly of the submarine with thousands of autonomous underwater drones, just like a pregnant spider ready to burst when they need it. Well, they now have air drones that are going to do about the same thing. They're called gremlins. DARPA's reusable gremlin drones, green lit for aerial mayhem, feasts after midnight. We've seen gremlins wreak havoc before, and it looks as though the Department of Defense's Advanced Research Division, of course more affectionately known as DARPA, is looking to create a little bit of mayhem on its own with aerial drones. DARPA has now awarded 4 contracts, so it seems that RFP is actually turned into some actionable items and some money's going to change hands. They've awarded 4 contracts to companies, one being Composite Engineering, number 2 being Dynetics, number 3 being General Atomics Aeronautical Systems, and number 4, of course, being Lockheed Martin, to develop low-cost, reusable aerial drones that can be launched and potentially even recovered mid-air upon successful completion of a mission. DARPA hopes that it will be able to load up these gremlins into a large bomber or a military cargo aircraft, and deploy them en masse to blanket an area with either an ordnance or camera surveillance, and the drones will also be portable enough to carry on the wings of pylons of jet fighter aircraft and other fixed-wing platforms for other mission profiles. Guys, it's going to be swarms of unmanned aerial drones. In the artist concept of a gremlin above in the picture that I am looking at, the drone features movable wings, which would likely be locked into a retracted position tucked alongside the body while it is being transported. So it looks like a little triangle. And after deployment, however, the wings would extend forward and create the lift necessary to sustain the gremlin in flight. While the gremlins complete their mission, hey, another mothership, it's going to be the pregnant C-130 transport aircraft. We'll retrieve them in the air and carry them home, where ground crews will prepare them for the next use within 24 hours, writes DARPA in explaining how a gremlin would be handled following the completion of its mission. DARPA has specified that gremlins must be reusable, but they will have a limited duty cycle before the airframes would have to be retired. It is this is compared to traditional drones used by the U.S. forces that have airframes that would last for decades. These are disposable drones, pretty much. DARPA envisions a useful life of 20 missions for each gremlin before it has to be decommissioned. However, it is still expected that the use of gremlins will provide significant cost advantages over existing larger aerial drone platforms currently being deployed. Yeah, we can let thousands of these go all at once, and they're small, and we can carry them and, like, carpet bomb you with swarms of gremlin drones. We've assembled a motivated group of researchers, very motivated, and developers that we believe could make significant progress toward Gremlin's vision of delivering distributed airborne capabilities in a robust, responsive, and affordable manner. You like how they say that? Yeah, basically, you're screwed. These drones are coming en masse, they said, and these teams are exploring different innovative approaches toward achieving that goal and are rolling up their sleeves for all that hard work ahead. Oh, guys. So now let's add to all this autonomy, artificial intelligence. We talk about that a lot. Deep learning, cognitive computing. We've looked at Google, Alphabet, parent company of Google. IBM, we saw they're working now with Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. Found that out yesterday with their big, I don't even remember what the name of it was, but it was their new artificial intelligence was designed against a human brain. Facebook, Microsoft, they're all working on these projects now. Well, don't worry about it because China won't be left behind. Google's equivalent in China, and they actually had the guy who started the AI division at Google went over to China's Beidou. I talked about Beidou yesterday. They were the ones the State Department blocked them from purchasing any more of Intel's processors that they were using for their supercomputing project. MIT Technology Review, how AI is feeding China's internet dragon. And I would be worried about China. Not only do they have a monster the size of Google that's working on AI and all kinds of other insane projects, but they also have that clone factory that they're getting ready to ramp up. They're planning on the first year cloning over 1 million cows. And the CEO came out and said that's already set up to do humans once they get the go-ahead. You know, we have Samsung and Toyota working on building mass armies of factory robot automation for countries such as China. And China just laid off millions of miners all in the name of climate change. Getting your carbon quotient down. These people are all out of jobs. They're being given all these low-paid jobs doing service industry stuff that eventually is going to be no jobs when there is no more money. And actually, we might get to that. They're really pushing for that cashless thing. And like I said, I don't think it's going to be a crash. I think it's just going to be, whoops, there are no more jobs, which means there's no more money. But don't worry about it. because we'll pay you to look pretty and we'll give you a robot to take care of you. Welcome to your dystopian future. All right. How AI is feeding China's internet dragon, China's biggest internet company, Baidu. I don't know. They might call it Baidu. I like calling it Baidu. B-A-I-D-U is pushing an ambitious effort to add artificial intelligence to its products. Shortly after walking through the front doors of Baidu in Beijing last November, I was surprised to notice that my face had transformed into that of a cheerful-looking little dog. And as I chatted with one of Beidou's AI researchers, the version of me shown on his smartphone had sprouted a very realistic-looking wet snout, fluffy ears, and a big pink tongue. The trick was performed on an app called FaceU, released by Beidou last Halloween, which lets you add all sorts of spooky and cute or animal characteristics to a digital image of your face. Oh, look how neat that is, Johnny. They can make you look like a doggy or an alien. Yes, but what you don't understand is that while they are making you look all cutesy or weird, they're doing 230-point facial recognition on you, mapping all the points in your face and all your reactions and emotions, and putting you into a database. Yes, FaceU, let's read a little more about it, Jenny, makes use of an AI technique called deep learning to automatically identify key points on a person's face so that software can then position and stretch a virtual mask with amazing accuracy. And back a few weeks ago, we looked at the new software that was released. We looked at it a few times. We looked at it back in December and then came back around because I guess it's ready for prime time. Where they were able to take, just with some famous people even, but imagine if they really tried, they were able to take images that they found for like George Bush and Barack Obama and I think Tom Hanks and a few other people that they just found in Google out in the search engine. And they had so many different angles, they were able to map them using this software that then the one camera could be aimed at the controller's face and mimicking the facial expressions and the mouth movements and then superimposing that on an output display where it took your words, your expressions, your movements, and superimpose them with the image of the other person. So when we saw that, people were like, whoa, reality is no longer reality. I mean, if they can already make Obama and George Bush and Tom Hanks and all these other people, Putin, be able to say and do things that they never said and did. And it was pretty convincing looking. And take a little bit of voice modulation. We read yesterday about Microsoft's big project with Skype that they've been doing where they've been sucking down everybody's voice and learning how to do quote-unquote translations. Don't think that they haven't been modulating your voice for your dossier. And we already saw that. I talked about that a long time ago, 9/11, that plane that went down in the field in Pennsylvania, and supposedly there were the phone calls before the plane went down, except they were like, well, wait, back in those days, they didn't have cell phone access from planes. You didn't have cell phones embedded in the back of seats either. So how the hell did this person call? Wasn't even possible in those days. Yet, the spouses that received the phone calls swore it was their loved ones. Well, how was that possible? Well, it is possible, guys. They've been able to modulate voice for a very long time. And now as they give away free products such as Skype that everybody uses, and I mean, it's not just Skype, it's all kinds of apps out there. And if you didn't use a voice app, hey, we got your cell phone tied right to your phone number, right to your house address where you pay your bills so we know it's you. You know, they've been bagging and tagging all of our audio for a long time. And I mean, I have an audio editing program. I've been doing audio editing for probably 20, 30, 25, early 90s. So what is that? 90s, 2000s. So 20, 30 years, that Sony Acid product. I mean, I can zoom in to a syllable. When I'm cutting shows and stuff, if I have to edit out for length, or I have to edit because of dead air or whatever, or I edit out a date because somebody wants to make it like a timeless archive, simple. Zoom in, see the waveform, cut it out. It doesn't take a rocket scientist. Anyway, back to this. So Beidou is doing this facial key point recognition. They can make it look all cutesy and sell it to the dumb end user. But really, they're bagging and tagging all the points on your face and being able to detect your emotions. Remember, this is all part of this pre-crime crap, too. We just saw a story last week about them being able to determine your mental state by your bodily movements as well. It says deep learning is driving a lot more than goofy apps at Beidou, though. It's making existing products smarter and helping the company's engineers dream up entirely new ideas. That's frightening, coming out of Google's equivalent in China, guys. This is where the war is going to happen. It's going to be a cyber war, and it's going to be with this mad science gone mad technology. Who is going to be able to control the population and the devices first? Make your notebook all of a sudden one day sprout legs while you're sleeping and kill you in your sleep. I mean, when I let my brain go, I just start seeing horrifying images of the future. I can't help it. Beidou is one of several companies, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, and IBM among them, that are using deep learning for new applications such as training computers to hold a conversation, while migrating older applications from conventional machine learning to deep learning, says Yan LeCun, a professor at New York University, one of the key figures in the history of deep learning and the director of AI research for Facebook. This is occurring at an impressive pace, he says, because deep learning has proved so effective at recognizing patterns and making predictions, ding, ding, from data. Deep learning is essentially an especially effective type of machine learning, a way of having computers program themselves after gobbling up vast quantities of data, and it involves feeding data to a large network of simulated neurons, which then gradually learn to recognize abstract patterns in that input. A trained network can then, for instance, spot objects in an image or determine whether a new email message is legitimate or is spam. This technique is certainly helping Beidou maintain its reputation as one of China's most innovative homegrown enterprises by just about any measure. Beidou is China's most successful internet business. Over 92% of the country's more than 536 million internet search users employ its portals, its portal services and its mobile apps, and it continues to grow. In the past year, it has moved to new areas, including streaming music, insurance, and banking. Oh, yes. No conflicts of interest there. Beidou is using AI to move quickly into a dynamic and competitive tech landscape, says Andrew Ng, the company's chief scientist. And I think that Andrew Ng, N-G, was the guy who had worked at Google before. The company's chief scientist and prominent machine learning expert. 2 years ago, the company created an internal group called the Institute of Deep Learning to explore ways to apply the technology across the company. And since then, Ng says the deep learning has helped transform its ad system, significantly improving their revenue, ding, ding, and powering all their new efforts, like the autonomous driving system Beidou demonstrated in December. The number of deep learning applications continues to grow each day, he says. Beidou's Deep Learning Institute often collaborates on AI projects with the Beidou Group, located where? Oh, in the United States, called the Silicon Valley AI Lab. So China's Google is collaborating with Silicon Valley's AI Lab. Now, if that's not telling, I don't know what is. This U.S. lab was opened in 2013 to attract AI talent already working or studying in the area. Yes, again, dangling carrots. Let's get all of our children in college to start working against humanity and suck them into the machine. One of the first things Beidou did after setting up the institute, Ng says, was to create a deep learning platform called Paddle that engineers and other departments could use. And yeah, Google just did the same thing. I think so did Microsoft, where they're releasing their AI software out to the cloud so everybody can get on board and start building apps for their tools now. That's how they get things to spread like wildfire. And researchers from the institute are often embedded within other departments. And as a result, deep learning has been used to improve Beidou's antivirus filters, which we talked about that. DARPA's already working on that. They want to have the Sentry system that searches and destroys without any human intervention. Beginnings of Skynet. And to protect when a hard drive in one of the company's giant server farms will fail, among other things. As I walk through the Institute's offices at Beidou HQ, evidence of frantic activity and experimentation were all around, and the lab recently moved to a new building on Beidou's campus to accommodate a larger team, and dozens of hastily set up desks were cluttered with boxes yet to be unpacked. On one of the bookshelves sat a drone, which researchers were using to build 3D models of street views. Jawai Gu, a youthful researcher, demonstrated the face morphing app. That's the one that we talked about that will put the mask over your face and allow you to talk and control someone else being broadcast. And he said the techniques used to build it might actually enable the company to branch out into virtual reality. Ding, 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 ding. For instance, we could provide a way to bring real-world objects into virtual-world environments. Jouet then showed me a wearable device Beidou has created to help the blind or partially sighted people navigate the world. It's called Dulight, and the device hooks onto your ear like a Bluetooth headset, captures whatever is directly in front of you, and then taps into a deep learning-based image recognition system to identify it. Jouet pointed Dulight at a chair and a potted plant, and it said, recognizing, dot, 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 light plastic chair, recognizing, dot, 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 lush green potted plant. And when he pointed the device at me, it said, dot, 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 a man smiles, about 37 years old. Wow, that's pretty freaky. And he says it could be configured to remember someone's name and then identify that person later as well. AI in the form of deep learning. Remember, we were also talking about giving computers eyes. That's a GPU, I think it was. VPU, vision processing unit. In the form of deep learning has already helped improve key Beidou products, including their core search algorithm. By making image searching far more accurate, has also increased the accuracy of the company's voice recognition engine, which enables voice search, as well as a relatively new voice-controlled personal assistant called Doer. Speech technology could be especially important to Beidou's future in China. Yes, as they are spying on all their citizens, it'll make it much easier now as it offers a more elegant way of using mobile devices than entering Chinese characters on a tiny screen. And any company with a lot of data should seriously consider deep learning, says Ng. It has a superpower that turns a huge amount of data into a huge amount of value. Yeah, we gotta love those superpowers, man. DARPA's Regina Duggan talked about superpowers that we were gonna get by embracing this technology. Well, talking about embracing technology, let's embrace some naughty bits. This story really disturbed me yesterday. You knew it was coming. We looked at the free virtual porn hub with the VR goggles And the sex bots, well, now, my crash flash, but it's okay. Here we go. Humans, this is like mapping the sick psychology on top of all of this mad science gone mad. They've now discovered that humans get turned on when they touch robot naughty bits. This came out of Gizmodo magazine yesterday. They may be plastic, metal, and wires, but robots can elicit physical responses in humans. And I mean, we just saw that Scarlett Johansson robot, Nadine, and I don't remember the third one's name, Sophia. All within the last week, three of them, three humanoid android robots. And now they roll it out. Oh, and the free VR Pornhub. And now they're rolling out how they've discovered humans get excited when you touch robot naughty bits. I see some profit coming. That is according to a new study by researchers who analyzed what happened to volunteers when they touched automatons in areas that would be thought of as intimate on an actual human being. Team of scientists from Stanford University has set up a series of experiments using a small Neo robot, which is disturbing because it is the same one that I think Hilton Hotels is using as their front desk check-in helper. The robot, whose shell is plastic, was programmed to ask 10 different participants to either point to or to touch one of 13 of its body parts. And as that happened, the team also measured skin conductance of the participants, which correlates with psychological arousal. And the team found that the strongest signals of arousal were observed when the participants were asked to touch the areas of the robot that would usually be home to genitals or buttocks. What a team amusingly calls body parts with low accessibility. I mean, can you see where this is going? I see the new financial report for the next 10 years for profits and sex bots are going to be out soon for $129.95. You can buy that report. Get your sex bots for the 21st century because you're going to make a bazillion dollars. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next. Josh is live tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern. Continue Condition, the boys from New York at 8. Liam Sheff at 9 and 11 p.m. Anti-Media with Nick and B. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday. And I will catch up with you tomorrow.